KTOO. Welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, July 25th, 2025. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Gunath Cheesh, Hawa, Toksig Nusum, Salamat. Thank you for joining the conversation. You can also join us for a behind-the-scenes, in-the-studio look on our YouTube at ktoo.org/JPMLive or see the live stream on KTOO's Facebook and Instagram pages. Today, we have a conversation we recorded earlier this week with Dr. Craig Davis from Peace Bridge Solutions, who rode his bicycle from Prince George to Juneau in a project called Ride for Peace. We check in with CBJ Parks and Recreation about Month of Play, which is in full swing. We chat about the rest of the schedule and how you can be involved. But to start us off today, I have President and General Manager Justin Shoman in the studio with me. It's been a week since President Trump signed HR Rescission Act of 2025, which has severe impacts on public media in Alaska for KTOO and beyond, indeed the whole nation. Justin, Gunath Cheesh, for being here to help us unpack all of what this means. So thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me today, Boston.
Of course. I know you've been having a very busy week, and even in the weeks ahead of this vote, you were very busy. Lots of things going on. But first, I just want to help us unpack sort of what this is, because we hear CPB, we hear NPR, we hear PBS, we hear KTOO, we hear all these acronyms and numbers. But I want to first ask the question, what is the Corporation for Public Broadcasting?
Yeah, that's a we are awash in acronyms, that's for certain, and that's a good question, Boston. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting is an independent nonprofit. It was established by the Public Broadcasting Act of 1967 with the sole intent to be an independent agency that would administer federal funding that Congress directed through the Corporation for Public Broadcasting specifically to fund public media. And part of that design in drawing up the Public Broadcasting Act was very intentionally to shelter it from political winds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what it is in a nutshell. They are an independent nonprofit who is charged with administering the annual allocation of federal funds.
So they get money from Congress.
They do.
That then they put out to the rest of a lot of stations around the country, smaller rural stations like here in Alaska. And when we hear some of the things we've heard in terms of percentages, we hear that, you know, NPR's percentage of the CPB funds is only like 1%. PBS has a little bit higher percentage there. But most of that money, if I'm understanding this right, is directed at stations like KTOO and our sister stations around Southeast and up North, and that money's directly coming from the CPB.
You are correct.
Okay.
And by statute, Public Broadcasting Act, 70% of that allocation has to go directly to community stations in any given year. I believe in that same statute that the Corporation for Public Broadcasting is able to keep about 5% for its own operating overhead.
Okay.
And then the rest of that fund is invested in various innovations. Most recently, CPB funding coming to the state of Alaska to establish the Alaska desk at Alaska Public Media. And many KTOO listeners are no doubt familiar with Alaska's energy desk from a number of years ago, which was another CPB project. So on top of funding local stations, they also really played a pivotal role in incubating these regional journalism hubs and just investing in journalism more broadly on the public media spectrum.
Okay, great. And so what exactly happened with this rescission bill? What does that mean?
It means historically, and I will no doubt get my dates wrong, but I think it was somewhere in the 90s. It may have been earlier that there was language added to the Public Broadcasting Act that created a two-year advance appropriation to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So, for instance, in fiscal 26, a budget that has yet to be decided, if we were talking about business as usual, what Congress would be considering would be public media's funding for fiscal year 28.
So for them, what they're talking about now in terms of budgeting, they're actually looking ahead a couple years for this particular corporation for public broadcasting. Yep. Okay.
And again, that was very specifically by design. Again, sort of that additional shield from the political winds of the time. So CPB up until rescission was not yet in possession because that comes from OMB, but through congressional budgeting was already allocated funding for fiscal 26 and fiscal 27. That federal fiscal year starts October 1. What rescission effectively did was it took back the money that was already appropriated. So it essentially undid a decision that Congress already made and took back that funding for fiscal year 26 and fiscal year 27.
Okay, so that means that money that KTOO and every other public media station around Alaska and beyond had in their budget, which for us started July 1, right? Our fiscal year starts
That's
July
correct.
1.
Yep.
So that money that we were counting on has just been taken back.
Yeah, rug pulled out.
No check coming. No check in the mail.
No.
Yeah, okay.
Sadly, no. I mean, many from our community already, and of which I am incredibly grateful.
Yeah.
So before I go any further, I do want to take a moment just to thank everyone who wrote their senators, who wrote their representatives, and really stood up in the fight for public broadcasting. Speaking to those congressional offices in Washington, I know that they were hearing more about this issue than any other to date, at least in this administration. So, you know, there was a really overwhelming outpouring of support, and I'm grateful for that. And our community has stepped up in a big way so far in the week since, you know, that funding was pulled from us. But it is a 34% hole in our budget for a fiscal year that started 3 weeks ago.
So 34%, and I believe the number I've heard is about $1.2 million of our budget is not there at the moment.
It is not there.
So, yeah, let's move to this idea. Obviously, this could have huge impact for KTOO. It could have huge impact for even the smaller stations, which the percentage of the budget for smaller stations in Alaska here in Southeast is sometimes even higher. Mm-hmm. For some, I think it's like 70, 75% of their budget. But 34% is nothing to sneeze at, and that's a big impact on KTOO. And so you all have big plans. I know, obviously, you mentioned our listenership, viewership has come through in this first week. People are doubling their donation amount. They're giving extra gifts if they can. And so I know that there's things that you are working on. Can you share a little bit about what you're working on? I know there's a lot of stuff that's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. There's, in many ways, I think we're still in the more questions than answers phase of this process. And sometimes when I reflect on it, it's hard to believe that it was only a week ago that the rescission vote took place. But here we are, 1 week later, sorting through the wreckage, if you will. And I have been really inspired and optimistic to see the ways in which the state is already pulling together. There's been a number of meetings pulling together statewide public broadcasting leaders across the network to talk about ways in which we might increase or create greater efficiency in our sharing of services, sharing of content. And we're also talking about, you know, what philanthropic interests, whether they be state of Alaska or nationally, that we as Alaska might be able to leverage, or we as a broader collective of rural stations across the United States may be able to leverage for additional dollars. And of course, all of these things take time. Mm-hmm. But this is, I think, really going to be key for many of us. I mean, here that 34% is that $1.2 million. That's a significant amount of money. And as you mentioned, Boston, some of our peers, 70, 75, 80% of their budget comes from Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So while we're looking at some very challenging decisions and some very hard times in the weeks and months ahead, the crisis isn't exactly existential for us, at least not yet. And it is for some of our colleagues across the state and for the public media network across the state. And of course, that, you know, that's going to expand news deserts. It's going to decrease our ability as this massive state that we are, all living in, you know, various aspects of some kind of geographic isolation, right? And you know, public media has so long been that lifeline and that connection to everything else happening. And it's just, we're going to have one less.
So what I can expect as a listener is to hear, we already have some fundraising messages that you have on air. Those are going to be happening over the coming weeks. So people listening, that you'll hear those messages. There's probably going to be some other campaigns. You might receive some emails. But that's what it's about. That's how I kind of wanted to get people understanding. So if they hadn't heard this news, and it's confusing news because it's like, I don't really understand how the money flows. It's all, you know, government, hopefully not politics, but seems to be a little bit of political maneuvering in there this time around. And so I just wanted you to be have a moment to come on and tell the folks about it. So what's the best thing? I know you can also find more information on our website. You have a full statement on there, mm-hmm. which I read last Friday. Yeah. There's going to be some other links. Is there a specific area where you want to direct people to?
At this point, we're asking the community for their direct support. So KTOO.org, go to that donate button, something you've heard plenty of times. During drives. And while we're not doing a drive at this point, we are pushing a lot of digital fundraising campaigns and really asking our community for that support. Just to provide a little bit of context, historically, membership dollars account for about $500,000 of our annual budget every year. And of course, the hole here is $1.2 million. So it's going to be hard to replace that amount of revenue from our community alone. But already in just a week, we have seen, I believe it's 177 donations as of this morning since the Rescission Act last Thursday. So there is a strong current of support already coming in. And it's really, I think it's keeping a lot of us going around here. Certainly, I can only speak for myself, but this has been a challenging week. It's been a challenging number of weeks.
Yeah.
And to see the community support come in the way in which it has, and with just the wonderful comments and the things that our community has to share about the importance of KTOO and the importance of public broadcasting, it's going a long way to keep morale a little bit higher here in the
Absolutely.
Building.
Well, good cheese, Justin, for taking a few minutes to share that with us. I'm sure we'll have you back on as we get updates. And yes, Juno, our community is amazing and they're already stepping up and we so appreciate you. So Gunnath Cheesh for being here today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Boston.
Okay. Up next, we will take a listen to our interview with Dr. Craig Davis, who rode from Canada to Juno in his ride for peace. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO.
Support from Hanson Gress. Seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansengress.com/careers.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
This is Juno Afternoon from your community-supported public media station, KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. I'm joined in studio now by Dr. Craig Davis, who just completed Ride for Peace, a bicycle journey from Prince George in Canada to Skagway and now Juno. Why did he do this? And what's the story behind it? Well, Craig is here to share his story and details of this grand adventure. Gunnath Cheesh, how you do? Thank you so much, Dr. Craig Davis. It's a pleasure to meet you and have you in the studio today. Wasa iti, how are you?
Well, thank you, Boston. Thank you for having me. I'm doing very well.
Yeah, so you just completed this journey, right? A couple days ago?
Yes, yes. So about 10 o'clock or 10:30, I got off the ferry from Skagway and Juno, and that was really the end of the journey.
And what day was that you did that?
That was Friday night.
Okay, so Friday, yeah. July 18th.
Yes,
okay.
That's right.
Yeah, awesome. So let's start at the beginning of this journey, and I do want to talk about your background as well, but Ride for Peace, where did this idea come from, and why did you decide to do it?
Yes, good question. So in 2021, in January and February, I did a ride from Florida to Louisiana and back. And it was right after the presidential elections. And I noticed that there was a lot of tension. in communities, among communities, within families. And as I stopped along the journey, I talked to people and asked them their opinion. And people of all socioeconomic backgrounds, of all education levels, of all ethnicities, different political backgrounds, all agreed that it was unhealthy, that the fabric of our society was being ripped apart. And almost everyone said they would be willing to volunteer to do something to help communities heal. I mean, this is what we, you know, what I had done internationally. But, you know, I thought about it. I wasn't ready to do something at the time. I talked to my daughter about it. I talked to my wife. And then this year, after the inauguration, I feel things got worse. And you can see it, you know, on social media. Someone makes a nasty blog or a nasty post. Someone else makes a nastier comment, and it just goes on and on. So we just sort of pulled the trigger in March, my wife, my daughter, and I, and we started Peace Bridge Solutions with the goal of becoming part of the solution. You know, either we can continue to complain and bellyache, or we can try to help communities heal. So we decided, together we decided the first project would be this awareness-raising activity, this campaign, this Ride for Peace. And the tensions, you know, a year ago would have been difficult to imagine we'd be in a situation where there was tension between Canada and the United States. So, but today here we are. And I had seen a lot of the comments online. I had heard people, you know, even in my own family make nasty comments or unhealthy comments. And so I decided this is where I'm going to start. You know, I'm going to raise awareness. I'm going to do something that was important to me and hopefully just listen to people as our very first activity. And that's how we started.
So peacebridgesolutions.com is so that's a newer company that you decided to start.
Yeah, it's a nonprofit. It's not a company. It's a nonprofit.
Okay.
Yeah. And we started it, as I said, with the goal of, you know, bringing some of these lessons learned, some of these approaches and techniques that we used in Iraq and Pakistan and Somalia, Afghanistan and elsewhere, bringing them to North America and elsewhere, attempting to try to help communities heal.
I see. Okay. So now, how did you decide on this journey from Prince George to Skagway? Why not, you know, Toronto to, you know, White Plains or something?
Well, I only had a month.
Okay.
So it was very much driven by how many miles I can ride a day.
Okay.
Within a month, how many meters or how many feet I can climb a day.
Yeah.
And so, which is not very much, you know, ideally I would like to go 35 or 40 miles a day, but often I had to do 50 or 55 miles a day.
Oh my gosh.
So that's, sort of determined by the accommodation. So what's available, you know, and while the summer is really the only time I am brave enough to ride in Alaska and Canada, it's also the busiest time of the season in the places I was. So accommodations are often booked up, you know, you're very limited. But, you know, I thought that I could make it from Prince George to Prince Rupert, and then I flew to Whitehorse and then rode down to Skagway and took this, then took the ferry over here. And I thought I could make this in 30 days, having some rain days and some rest days. And I made it, although some of the rain days I was out riding.
Yeah, right. I bet. Yeah. It's interesting to, I was looking at the blog. You can follow the blog that Craig created on the peacebridgesolutions.com website. You can see he blogs basically pretty much every day of the journey. A lot of pictures, a lot of stories of what happened along the way. I want to talk about a couple of those. But the idea of doing this, Did you have to train in advance? Have you been a cyclist? What was the hardest part of this journey for you?
Yeah, so I didn't start really riding until I turned 60. So in 2000, I'd been thinking about it for a while, and so I made the first trip in Florida, so about 650 miles, and it took me about 3 weeks, and I really enjoyed it, you know. And I'm an introvert. I don't get outside much, unless I'm just running or exercising or something, walking or exercising. So it really took me out of my comfort zone. I talked to people along the way. And then the next year, I did it to Louisiana, as I mentioned. I've been to Vietnam, Scandinavia. And I've had all of these wonderful experiences. I've met wonderful people. But I always felt like I was missing an intention or missing a goal. You know, there was something I could do. I was missing an opportunity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this sort of all came together when we started Peace Bridge, and we thought, you know, what's our first activity going to be? Mm-hmm. So for me, it was, pretty clear that this is what I wanted to do. And I wanted to do something concrete. I really wanted to listen. And I wanted to capture stories, and I had been writing a blog. And in my work, I do a lot of writing, or I did a lot of writing. So it just sort of came natural.
I see. Okay. What was the most difficult portion of the trip for you?
So I think the most difficult day was when I rode 54 miles, I think, to Prince Rupert, and it had been raining all night. I knew it was going to rain all day. You know, when I left, it was a 6-hour journey. Plus, you know, I think it was 1,300 feet or
incline,
foot climb.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it rained for the first 2 hours, you know, pretty good, pretty strong precipitation. And then it stopped for 2 hours, but I was soaked. And then the last 2 hours, it just pounded me. And strong winds, it was cold, a lot of hills. And that was my most difficult day.
Did you have a moment in that period where you're like, what am I doing here? Why did I say yes to this?
Yes, yes. So I had a couple of those moments. I always do. They're never to the point of me considering stopping, but I often ask myself, you know, am I getting too old for this? Mm. Is this, you know, too hard? Why am I not just sitting on a sofa somewhere streaming Netflix?
Right, right. And is this a solo adventure? You did this on your own?
I did this on my own. I always ride on my own, not because I necessarily want to, but my family are not interested in riding long distances with me.
They're like, Craig, go ahead. Do your
little
project.
Craig, go ahead. Yes, yes. We'll follow you. We'll read your blog. Although I did meet one Canadian along the way, and we rode together off and on for about 3 days.
Oh, nice. That's wonderful. Yeah. That's where I'm going with this is so you decide to do this journey. It's challenging, but part of what you want to do is, as you say, build bridges. So you're meeting people along the way. Tell us about this person that you rode with a little bit.
Yes. I was riding one day behind, I saw there was a rider ahead of me. And usually I can't see riders because usually they're faster than me. Mm. Unless they pass me, I don't see them. So, but this gentleman was resting and I came up on him. He was a year younger than me. We started talking and then I rode off. You know, I stayed there maybe 10 minutes talking to them and then I rode off. And I didn't see him for a while and then I had a flat tire. And so I was sitting there repairing my flat tire and he came along and he said, you want me to do the last, you want me to pump for a while? And I said, yes. So he helped me. And then we were talking. He'd been camping out. He said, I can't afford to stay in a hotel every night. It was particularly cold that day, so I said, look, I have a room. Why don't you share it with me? So he came and stayed with me that night, and then off and on for the next couple of days, you know, we kept bumping into each other.
That's great. And did you have conversations about the work that you're doing?
We did, yeah. Yeah, so we had a lot. He, you know, was – he had been in the Army, in the Canadian Army, and he had very strong opinions. He was very polite. He was very courteous. But, you know, like all of us, you know, he had opinions, and he felt that, you know, we did need to do some healing, you know. And so hopefully I have, you know, met several of these people who in the future I can stay in touch with, and we'll see the type of support we can get.
So was the goal, like, you would be riding from, you started in Prince George, you ran, you rode all the way to these different places, like you said, then you took the ferry, and or you flew, you said you flew?
Yeah, I flew from Prince Rupert to Whitehorse.
Okay, Whitehorse, and then you kept riding.
Yeah, yes.
So when you were getting to your target cities, was there plans to sort of engage with folks in the cities? And did you have conversations about healing? And what did you learn along the journey, I guess, is
what
I'm wondering.
Yeah, so, you know, I think, you know, this trip sort of happened quickly. I was – so we established Peace Bridge Solutions in March. I probably decided sometime in late March or early April we were going to do this trip. I was closing a project in Honduras. So my family and I were in Honduras. We have three adopted grandchildren who live with us. They were finishing school. We were moving back to the United States. So I was trying to do all this while I was trying to organize and plan the logistics for this trip. So, and I was, you know, I relied on volunteers, and, you know, we have a handful of volunteers, but I had to do a lot of it myself. So I did not plan all of the events I would have liked to. And I wasn't able to do the outreach that I hope to do next time. However, I think that, you know, we did accomplish what we wanted to. You know, what I mainly wanted to do was to talk to people, to listen to people, tell them about Peace Bridge Solutions, talk about some of the approaches, you know, that I had used elsewhere, get their opinions. And I found what I found was that I met people with all types of different political positions. Some wanted to, you know, the first thing they wanted to do for 5 minutes was vent, you know, so I listened. I wasn't terribly interested in their political opinions, were very apolitical. But I wanted to get past that and hear what they thought we could do, not what our politicians can do, but what we could do in our communities to make to start this healing process. And if we thought, you know, if we thought it was possible. And so I think that they told me, keep doing what you're doing. You know, we support you. There aren't enough people who are trying to be part of the solution. You know, they're part of the problem. And so I think we stimulated or sparked the discussion and dialogue that we'd hope to.
Yeah, is that the main takeaway, is that, you know, communication in the community between people is, that's the priority, right?
I think so.
Just to get talking.
I think so. You know, if we can't, and we have this, you know, even in families, you know, we, if, you know, where parents have stopped talking to their children, brothers have stopped talking to brothers, you know, husband and wives have problems. You know, and I have some of this in my family. So if we can't speak respectfully to our loved ones, to our neighbors, you know, how can we survive in the next decade or so?
Yeah.
And we see, you know, some of this political violence. We see politicians and congresspeople being attacked, a presidential candidate being attacked, you know. And so this is not helpful. And doing everything we can. You know, I'm not talking about the politicians in Washington or you and I doing everything we can, mm-hmm. everything reasonable. And I think we can do better, you know, and this is what the message that I kept hearing from people. I heard something real interesting in Prince Rupert. I sat at a coffee shop talking to another cyclist who was about my age, had very strong opinions. And so I asked him, you know, about three times, you know, what can we do better? What can we do better? You and me. And finally, he said, you know, he thought about it for about, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds. And then he said it would have to start with self-reflection for me. And he was talking about himself, you mm-hmm. know, for me really looking internally and fixing, you know, my own perspectives on things before I reach out to others. And that's exactly what the process that I went through and am still going through. So mm-hmm. so I feel like, you know, we stimulated that dialogue. To hear is in 6 months people write me or read the articles or who I met and shook hands with and say, you know, thanks to this discussion that we had or hearing you on the radio, we are now, you know, volunteering for this program that tutors youth who are failing mathematics or whatever the activity is. Or we have started this community garden and we're donating all of the fruit and vegetables to a homeless shelter or right. something like that. So that's what I would like to hear. I mean, you don't really know if projects are successful until they have ended, you know, and then if you still have impact after the activity ends, then you know you are successful.
Now, what are the next steps for Ride for Peace or Peace Bridge Solutions? Where do you take away from this and what are you going to do next?
Yeah, so we returned to our home. We haven't been in our home for 4 years. We returned to our home in Florida. We move back in. The kids start school. And then I will start looking at, you know, different nonprofits. I'm in from Panama City, Florida. Certain church groups, other groups, schools, talking to people and identifying partners. Because I don't want to do any of this on my own. I am not accustomed to doing things on my own. I'm accustomed to doing things with a team and other groups. And find out, first of all, how can what Peace Bridge does, how can we complement what's already going on? You know, or what gaps are there to fill? And I want to identify priorities, community priorities. And I also want to make sure that I'm not just preaching to the choir. I want to identify partners who have different perspectives. I don't want, you know, all of the different volunteers and partners to have the very same perspectives that I do. That wouldn't be accomplishing the goal we want. I want people from different backgrounds, different educations, different political perspectives to work together on these community activities. And through that, it doesn't really matter what the activities are so much, but by working together to solve common goals or solve common problems, we build that common ground and we begin to see that the other is not so different than us, that they have similar values and world views, and next time we have a problem, you know, or we have an obstacle, we may not be afraid to go talk to them and try to solve it.
Now, you have a long history of working around the world, really. You've worked in, like you mentioned, Afghanistan, Honduras, many different places around the world, and different contracts and different things that you've done over your time. Is there a theme or a common element of all that work that you've done that you're now sort of solidifying into Peace Bridge?
No, I think very much so. So, and all of these places, you know, it has been some branch of humanitarian work that I've been doing. So it's been education, sometimes emergency work, often development where you're working in health issues or workforce development, helping young people build the skills so they can get a job in their own country. So for the peace building part, what we have tried to do is you go into Somalia, for example, and you work with different clans. You work with different groups, you know. So the mayor, politicians, young people, older people, some who are very educated, some who are less educated. And you bring them together for a community meeting. Then you identify representatives of all these different groups, and you have a 2 or 3 day community session where you have several activities and trust building activities. Then they identify priorities. So maybe they need to build one classroom, add one classroom to the school they have. Maybe they need a bridge that has been destroyed, or maybe they need retention walls, or whatever it is they need. And then the USAID, who I worked for many of those years, they would in the private sector gaps, and then you would insist on volunteers. So volunteers would do a lot of the work, and you would have them oversee, if there was construction, you have them oversee the process. If there were, if it was workshops, then you would have them oversee the quality of that. And by working together and having that common goal, and, you know, even though clans had been fighting maybe for a generation or longer, they would begin to build trust. That didn't mean you solved all the problems in 6 months that had been going on for generations, but you begin to see changes in perspective. Mm. And once, as I mentioned, you begin to see others differently, not as the evil other, but you begin to see them as someone that you can trust, someone that you can talk to, someone who, when you need help, you can go to them and rely on them to help you. And so that's what I want to bring to Peace Bridge Solutions and in Florida, for example, or elsewhere. And we want to try to use those same tools and bring people together to identify their problems. And once again, they may be different things. We're probably not going to be able to be building retention walls and things like that, but we very much could work with youth who are failing classes to reduce dropout rates and things like this that are very important for communities. So once you find out what those common goals are, you just bring the right people together and you find solutions. And, you know, if we have to get grant funding to do that, if we have to get donations or whatever it is, you know, that's what we'll do.
Well, here to community conversation and healing and all of those things. Where can people follow this journey? I'm peacebridgesolutions.com. Are you also on social media and such?
We are. So we're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. You know, follow us on Instagram. If you go to peacebridgesolutions.com, you will find a page for the peace blog. You'll find buttons for volunteering, for donating, you know, or for sending us comments, you know.
Absolutely.
Please let us know what you think.
Well, enjoy the rest of your time here in Juneau. And you have one of, yeah.
Yeah. I just very briefly like to mention my sponsors.
Oh, please do.
Yeah.
Shout them out.
So in just some of my key sponsors, in Whitehorse, Yukon, Destination Family Hotel, in Skagway, Explore Skagway, Alaska, the Visitor Center, Holland America Skagway Inn, in Kentucky, Coleman Brothers Farmers Market, in Vanderhoof, BC, the Hillview Guest Rooms, and in Prince Rupert, G-Bike.
Nice. Excellent. Everybody comes together to make it happen, right? That's part of the journey. Dr. Craig Davis, thank you so much. Go to peacebridgesolutions.com. There's links to all the socials and, like you said, the peace blog. And enjoy the rest of your time here in Juneau.
Let's have a star party. This is Steve Kosis with the Marie Drake Planetarium. I'm going to talk about Neptune. It is the eighth planet from the sun after the 2006 International Astronomical Union decision to redefine what a planet is. And what's interesting about Neptune, that unlike the other planets, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, and Uranus, it is not visible to the unaided eye. Uranus is just at the limit of visibility to the unaided eye. And also what's interesting about Neptune, it's the only planet that was discovered through paper and pen. Now, the planets Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn were known to the ancient Greeks. They're visible on dark nights. And Uranus was discovered by the British astronomer Herschel. He initially thought it was a comet, but when he watched its position night after night, it turned out to be the planet Uranus. Now, Uranus had a very strange orbit because Newton's laws of gravity predicted it in certain positions, and it was not following those positions. So, two possible conclusions: Newton's laws of gravity were wrong, or there was an additional planet beyond Uranus that was causing these changes in its predicted orbit. So two mathematicians, one British, one Belgian, started doing calculations, paper and pencil, and determined where this eighth planet should be. And astronomers were notified in Britain and Belgium and looked in the appointed place. And the Belgian astronomer's calculations were published first, so he's given the credit, even though the British astronomer was able to publish just a short time after the Belgian astronomer. This is Steve Kosis with the Marie Drake Planetarium. Our public shows are on our website at mariedrakeplanetarium.org. Thank you.
Support for Juneau Afternoon comes from Alaska Airlines Club 49. Membership information available at club49hub.com. You are listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K, dedicated to Carolyn Hobbs Peterson here at KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. Sunny Mauricio is here from the City Parks and Recreation Department to tell us all about the month of play, which is in full swing already, Sunny. Gunnath Cheech for being here. Wasiti, how's it going?
Thank you for having us. It's going good. We're 2 weeks into month of play.
Okay. Yeah, this is something that started at the beginning of middle of July. It goes middle of July basically to middle of August. And it's a really awesome series of events that have already happened. The trucks and stuff happened, which I know some of my nephews went to.
Oh, nice.
Climbing in the city buses and the fire trucks, and that's kind of fun. And then you had some other stuff happening. But really, we want to talk about what's going to be coming up. There's a couple things that are currently in progress, though.
Yeah.
So one more day for the food drive. Tell us a little bit about the food drive and what people need to do to get on that.
Yeah, so food drive at Zach Gordon Youth Center is happening right now. It's been happening for about a week, and tomorrow is the last day. I believe they close at 9 p.m., so once they close, that'll be the last of the food drive, where you can come drop off some shelf-stable food, which goes really far for the kids there. They cook hot meals every single day.
Well, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Now, you can go to bit.ly/monthofplay, right, to get the information. And that's on the flyer here that's on our stream as well. Or you can go to junoparks.org, which is a nice short URL that you have, junoparks.org, and that'll lead you to the main page for Parks and Recreation, and there'll be some links there about all of these different events we're talking about. Before we continue, though, Sonny, what is the month of play? Where did this idea come from?
So it used to be Day of Play, and I think it was going on for like 20 years, and then around COVID, we decided to do month of play. Kind of, it allows us to do a lot more events and spread them out throughout a month, and people can kind of pick and choose what works best for them. And then it also allows us to do these really fun sort of DIY activities. Like Goose Chase is happening right now, and we actually extended it out to the 31st.
Goose Chase?
Yeah, it's a scavenger, virtual scavenger hunt.
Okay, virtual scavenger hunt. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so we actually have, we create all the challenges ourselves, and there's over 300 challenges that will take you all around town to like different historic places. It'll have you going to the city museum, state office building, and there's a lot of other fun challenges too, like jump in the water fully clothed or recreate the Abbey Road crossing the walk photo.
Oh, I love that.
Over 300 activities, and it'll have you going all around Juneau with your family. And there's actually some prizes that come along with that for first, second, and third place.
Okay. Yeah. And so it's not too late to jump on those activities for the Goose Chase.
No, not too late at all. We extended it out for people to join in. We've have over 60 teams right now.
Oh, 60 teams.
Yeah. And there's usually it's about 3 to 6 people per team. So whatever the math is on that.
And you do, you have a list of activities and you do those and you report them and you keep track and all that?
Yeah. So it's on your phone. So you go to your app store, you'll download the Goose Chase app. And then you'll search for Month of Play 2025. You can join in, create your team, send invites to your family. They can join in. And then it'll. Some of them are like you type out the answer, or you'll actually use your camera to like film a video or take a photo and submit it. And then there's actually like a really cool like kind of almost social feed within the app. So you can see what other people are submitting as well.
Yeah, it'd be fun to see the pictures of people fully clothed in the water. That's probably, you got to prove that you did it, right?
Exactly. You got to show the proof.
No photo, didn't happen, or whatever that phrase used to be. That's kind of cute. And then that's not it, though. There's a whole bunch of other stuff coming up, right? Let's talk about the movie in the park.
Yeah, so that's actually happening tomorrow.
Tomorrow, okay.
And that'll be at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. We have two showings. Our traditional showing will be at 2 p.m., so the lights will be off, the sound will be up, and then we have our sensory-friendly showing at 6:30, where it's the opposite. The lights are up a little bit, the sound's down, and we turn the captions on. That one's a little more friendly for people who might need the captions, or if you want your kid to kind of run around and play a little bit on the turf, a little more friendly for that.
I see. I haven't seen a Minecraft movie. Is it scary?
No, actually, maybe some of the scenes where they go to the Nether. I don't know if you played Minecraft before.
I've only played it a little bit, but I know there are monsters in Minecraft, right?
Yeah.
There's creatures that can do you harm.
Yeah, there's some creepers and different monsters, but it's super,
But it's tame. You saw the movie.
I saw it. It's family friendly.
Okay,
and
good.
It's fun,
okay.
And, you know, Jack Black's in it, and he keeps it lighthearted, so.
Is there a suggested age limit for that? Like, can you want to bring like your 2-year-old is okay and things like that, or is that parental discretion?
It's PG. Okay. I have a 1.5-year-old that I'd feel comfortable bringing my daughter to it. So,
okay, all right,
personally.
That's good to know. And I love that there's two showings: traditional showing at 2 p.m., lights off, normal movie type atmosphere, and then sensory friendly where the lights are on. It's a little bit quieter because I know some kids are really sensitive to sound.
Yeah.
My daughter was very sensitive to sound when she was really young. And then also the captions are on for those who may need captions, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
That's tomorrow night. What time does that – it's at 2 and then for the first showing, and then 6:30 is the sensory-friendly showing, and that's out at the Diamond Park Fieldhouse.
That's correct. Okay. And doors will be opening 15 minutes before. So show actually starts at 2 and 6:30. So if you want to show up at 1:45 or – 6:15, mm-hmm. doors will be open for you.
And we should mention these don't have any costs associated to it.
Yeah, that's the great thing about Month of Play. So these are actually all Month of Play activities, and all the activities over the 4 weeks are all completely free.
That's amazing. Yeah. It's great for families and stuff to be able to do these kind of things. Okay, let's talk about Story Path. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, so that'll be one of those week-long events. Story Path, we actually did it earlier this year, and I think I came on and talked about that. Mm-hmm. And that'll be over at Overstreet Park on the path there. What's that path called?
The Seawalk?
The Seawalk.
Where we walk along the water and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we hang up the spreads on the railing there, and we're actually going to be featuring the Big Bear and the Blueberry Moon by local author Pat Race.
Oh, awesome. So, that's great.
Yeah, we always try to do some local artists or authors to feature.
Do you blow up the pages or something, or how does that work?
No, we actually take the physical book and kind of dissect each spread, and then we put it into, it's almost like a, it looks like a something you'd hang on your wall in your house or something.
That's cool. You know, so. Yeah, that's nice. And featuring local author Pat Race, which is great.
Yeah.
And that's going to be up for the whole week, so you can just go and do that activity whenever you, during the day or in the early part of the evening, whatever it is, right?
Yeah, August 1st through 7th.
Okay. What happens when it rains?
They're actually waterproof.
They're waterproof.
Yeah. We had I don't remember when, I think it was 4 or 5 years ago, whenever they started Story Path, one of our park maintenance guys created these really fancy sort of waterproof hangers.
Awesome.
So, yeah.
That's cool. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's Story Path. You can do that at Overstreet Park or the Whale Park, as some people refer to it. And then you've also got some stuff going on with the library.
Yeah, so next Saturday, August 2nd, we'll have Level Up at the library, and that'll be at the Douglas Library.
Mm-hmm.
1 to 3 p.m., and we're encouraging kids or family to come dressed as your favorite character or cosplay creation, and there'll be a lot of games set up for...
Level Up, that means that's a video game term.
Exactly.
Right? Okay, yeah. So yeah, your favorite video creation or cartoon character or whatever it might be, right?
Yeah, it could be a Minecraft character.
Could be a Minecraft character. Or what's the other thing the kids play? Well, not even kids, a bunch of people play it. The Roblox, right?
Oh, Roblox, Fortnite.
Yeah, that's all those things. Okay, so and you can do that at Douglas Library from 1 to 3 p.m. on Saturday, August 2nd. Again, we're talking about the Month of Play with the CBJ Parks and Recreation Department. You can go to bit.ly/monthofplay or CBJ Parks.
Juno Parks.
Juno Parks, sorry. JunoParks.org. And you can see the list of all these activities, or you can look at the live stream and you can see the flyer that they have. It's probably all up around town as well.
Yep.
And then, okay, so a couple final events happening near the end of Month of Play on August 8th. Let's talk about those.
Yeah, so that'll be the finale of the Month of Play. And we have two free skates. We got our family skate happening 5 to 6:30, and then disco skate 7 to 8:30. And you can expect the prize drawing for the finale of Month of Play at the disco skate at 8 p.m.
I love it. Yeah. A disco. Does that mean you're gonna have the ball and the whole
lights off and the ball and all the
spinning
fancy lights
and all that? You're gonna play like Bee Gees and stuff?
That's a great question.
You're not the music director.
I'm not the music director, but I could throw in some recommendations.
But you got to do, you know, like I Will Survive. You got to do some Bee Gees, maybe some Saturday Night Live.
You know,
Saturday Night Live. Saturday Night Fever. I'm sorry, Saturday Night Fever.
I'll write that down. I'll take some recommendations.
Yeah, disco, the disco era.
Yeah.
It didn't last long, but it's fun to remember it.
Yeah.
So that's going to be a free skate. You've got a regular one, a family skate from 5 to 6:30, and this is on August 8th, which is that the final, is that another Saturday there?
August 8th? Let me see.
Let's find out. We got to remember what kind of, when is August 8th?
I think that is a Friday.
That's a Friday night. Okay.
Friday night.
So Friday night, August 8th, free skate at Treadwell Arena for families from 5 to 6:30, and then disco skate from 7 to 8:30 p.m. That's awesome. And then you're going to do the final prize drawing that night as well.
Yep. That's correct.
That's cool. And Month of Play is happening. It's doing it. It's junoparks.org or bit.ly/monthofplay. Sonny, thanks so much for coming in. Is there anything else at Parks and Rec we want to know about right now?
I guess the last thing I would say is we have our passports to play, which gets you free admission to the Juno Pools and the Diamond Park Fieldhouse. And so that'll be going up until August 8th as well.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, yeah, yeah, so awesome.
If you want to check out the pool, that's on our website.
Awesome. Well. Okay, so go to junoparks.org. All right, Sonny, thanks so much. Good to cheese for being here today.
Thank you.
Here's a little bit of Liz Snyder with Dark Side. We'll do it for Juno Afternoon. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO Juno 104.3 and KAUK 91.7 Juno Auk Bay. Hello, out the road. You can find the show online at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon, where you can listen to episodes, subscribe to the podcast, offer feedback or suggestions, or find out how to be a guest on the show. You can also find live stream archives of the show on KTOO's YouTube page. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Programming support for Juno Afternoon comes from listeners and viewers like you, never more important than now, and Alaska Airlines Club 49, Hanson Grass, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company. Juno Afternoon is a project of the KTOO Arts and Culture team. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunnath Cheesh! You can tune over now to catch DJ Kelly on KXLL at 100.1. 101.7 or 100.7 or online for an hour of music and fun with DJ Kelly. Go check it out on KXLL. Have a great weekend, everybody. Gunnath Cheesh!